Introduce yourself, please.
Good afternoon. I am Representative Gail McCann-Beatty. I represent the 26th District here in Kansas City, which includes UMKC campus, and I am the newly elected House Minority Leader.
That's the big news. We're glad you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's play the open. This is State House Blend Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee and donuts to better understand the Missouri General Assembly, the people, and the issues in Jefferson City. Here we go. Welcome to State House Blend Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. Today on the program, Kansas City Representative Gail McCann-Beatty. She's now the leader of the Missouri House Democrats. First this week in Jeff City, transition operations are underway in the governor's office and every other statewide office, too. Governor-elect Eric Greitens met last week with the current governor, Jay Nixon. They both said those were positive conversations, and they're both committed to a smooth handoff on Inauguration Day, which is just 7 weeks away. This week, though, economic news was the talk of the town. Some of it showed how complicated the job is that Greitens will be stepping into. Let's start with good news. October numbers came out from the state labor department showing that Missouri has its highest ever number of jobs, 50,000 more than a year ago, more than 2.8 million altogether. Unemployment dropped too. It's down to 5.1%. That's all good and well, but there's also some less rosy economic news. It's a story that may sound familiar to some Kansans. Missouri revenue numbers coming in below projections. Representative Scott Fitzpatrick, the incoming House Budget Committee chair, says the number's at least $200 million, the result of slower than expected growth. And that means one of the new governor's first acts will be to make the budget work by cutting money from, well, that's up to him. Education, infrastructure, economic development. We'll wait and see. Some other news this week, the incoming House and Senate party caucuses elected leadership for their new session. Not many changes in the Republican leadership. Todd Richardson of Poplar Bluff will still be House Speaker. Ron Richard of Joplin continues as Senate President pro tem. But Kansas City Democrats moved up the ranks in their respective caucuses. Kiki Curls will be the Assistant Minority Leader in the Senate. And Gail McCann-Beatty is now House Minority Floor Leader. And she joins us today on State House Blend Missouri. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you for having me.
We also have KCUR's newscaster Kyle Palmer. Good afternoon, Kyle.
Oh, happy to be here, Brian.
Glad you're here. He's working late here. He's already done the newscast. This is like his 10th hour of work. We're glad he's here.
But I get paid overtime, so.
Wow. Well, that's right. It's those new Fair Labor Standards Act regulations. That's great. Gail, I want to start with what I guess is not a very friendly question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
Democrats lost every statewide office except auditor, which wasn't up for election this
Correct.
Year. They continue to be outnumbered more than 2-1 in both the House and the Senate. Jason Kander lost to Roy Blunt. Could the news have been any worse for Democrats this year?
It was pretty difficult to take, I have to admit. But there is a small light in the House. You know, we picked up a seat in a special election last year, and then we picked up an additional seat this go round. So when you look at all that happened with Democrats in this election, the fact that we actually were able to pick up an additional seat is a small light amongst everything else.
It's a pretty small light.
It's a small light. It's a start. You've got to start somewhere.
You see this happening at the national level with the Democratic Party. I'm curious to know, at the state level in Missouri, there's kind of a postmortem, an analytical or psychoanalytical breakdown at the party level of what you need to do in order to have your message resonate with a larger audience. Do you think that there are more people to reach in Missouri? Right now your party's of course concentrated in Kansas City, St. Louis, and then Boone County, where Columbia is, and the University of Missouri. Do you see it as a necessity that your party has to kind of reach out, as the euphemism goes, in post-election America, and try to build bridges and broaden your message?
I think we absolutely do. We've always considered our party kind of the big tent party, but if you look, we've lost a lot of our really most of our rural members, and we've got to do that. We've got to regroup. We've got to work together, and I think we have a message that will resonate in our rural areas too. They have some of the same similar concerns. They're looking at hospitals closing, and they're looking at folks that are having issues with poverty, and so we just need to get that message out, and it's going to require us to really come together and put forth a message that people understand that we are that big tent party.
So what's the message? I mean, what is the message that you think will resonate and attract people to the tent?
Sometimes we polarize ourselves between the urban and the rural, and we have to stop doing that. As I said, healthcare is an issue probably of as much concern in our rural areas because they have limited access to healthcare. So that's probably one of the bigger issues. But we also have to recognize that our farm people are, that's our biggest industry. And so we need to make sure that we are providing proper legislation that protects that. We're looking at trade and where are we trading and how do we create more trade within our state. So I think there are definitely things that we need to work on in that message. We believe that, you know, folks should be able to make a living wage. And I think we'll continue to push those things that we've always pushed. But we do have to do a better effort at reaching out to our rural folks.
How much of a role does race play in that? And how much do you think that had an impact on Missouri's results?
Sad to say, this last election, I think, was very devastating to race relations, not just in Missouri, but all over the country. And we are going to have to figure out how do we mend that. And I hope that the speaker and our new governor would join with me in saying we're not allowing this in our state, that we are not going to accept. You know, we had an issue in St. Louis schools where some students walked out over some race issues. And there is an element of folks who have decided that things that maybe they would not have said, that it is now okay to say them. And we are going to have to put a lot of effort into how we build better race relations within our state. This last election was not good. I would argue that it set race relations back through the entire country 20 to 30 years.
I want to talk about, you mentioned the governor, and I think a lot of folks pay a lot of attention once the legislature comes into session in January, but don't realize how much is happening now in the 7 weeks, 8 weeks between the election and Inauguration Day and the start of the new session. Have you spoken with Governor-elect Greitens?
I have not yet. I do have every intention of reaching out to him. He's got a tough job ahead coming in. When you look at when it's a changing of the parties, whether you're looking at staffing, he has to build, you know, his own coalition. We've got a budget issue that he's going to have to deal with right off the bat. So he's got a lot on his plate right now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you know, we are all here to represent Missouri, and we still have to figure out how do we do that.
Well, and I want to ask you about the budget issue, too. But I guess I'm curious, would you have expected to hear from him by now as the arguably the leading Democratic elected voice in the state?
I would have liked to have heard from him by now, but I also recognize with no political experience, I would imagine he is pretty overwhelmed at this immediate moment.
Mm-hmm. And when you do hear from him or when you reach out to him and get a hold of him, what will you say to him?
That, you know, I want the ability to get to know him, to understand what his priorities are, figure out are there some things that both parties can work on together to improve Missouri. I don't think that everything has to be so polar opposites that there is nothing out there that the two sides can't work together on. And I think we'll make a better state if we come together and work together.
He was very critical of the General Assembly, and not just Democrats, Republicans too.
Yes.
He talked about corrupt career politicians, and he was not just speaking of statewide officers, he was speaking of the General Assembly as well, mm-hmm. it seems. What do you think it'll be like for legislative leaders of both parties to work with him? Will they be able to move forward in spite of the campaign and the rhetoric?
I am hopeful that that will happen. I think he has a lot to learn about the General Assembly because I don't believe that your typical person who serves in office is corrupt. You sacrifice a lot to do that, but we do it because we care. And so that's a fence that's going to have to be mended on both sides of the aisle, because I think that was very offensive to people. Now, on the other side, there are some ethics things that we probably need to work on. We took a vote, and clearly people want campaign finance limits. But there are still some other things from an ethics perspective that we need to work on. And so it'll be interesting to see whether or not, given that that was one of his major issues in the campaign, whether or not that will be one of the first priorities that we work on.
I mean, how about in the General Assembly itself, in terms of your relationship with the Republican leadership in the House? Do you have a good working relationship with Speaker Todd Richardson, with the rest of the leadership on that side?
I think I do have a good relationship with the Speaker. We have vowed that we will be communicating and trying to work together. We've actually been trying to get together this week, and it just hasn't happened yet. But I think that is very important to how we move forward. And looking at some of those things that we can work together on. This is both of our last terms in the House. And I'm hoping that we will actually be able to move some things forward rather than having gridlock, and that we've seen both in the state as well as at a federal level.
And do you feel like any of the levers of power are on your side? I mean, when you talk about things moving forward, you know, it's not like the Senate where there's a filibuster where, theoretically at least, you would be able to put the brakes on some things. Is there anything that you can do to either slow down or speed up the process, or is it all in the other party's hands?
I would say it's probably much in the other party's hands, but I think Speaker Richardson is a very common sense kind of person. So in that respect, I think we can come together and say, okay, I get there are certain things we are simply going to be opposite sides on, and I understand that. But I also believe that when we start talking about some of the education issues, when we start talking about healthcare and not necessarily even Medicaid expansion, but some of the other issues we have with healthcare and the fact that the costs are rising so much, that those are things that we are absolutely going to have to come together on and work on.
I imagine the temptation to be a little bit more confrontational, antagonistic, might be there, considering that might be the only way in some instances for some issues that you can get your voice out, get your message out. Is that a temptation? And what would be your counsel to yourself and your colleagues if that ever comes up in this session?
I think that is definitely a temptation. And quite frankly, I think we owe it to our constituents to, when we see something that is a problem, that we make sure that we point it out, that we make sure we're saying, this isn't right, this isn't what's best for our citizens. So I think you will probably see some confrontation over the course of the session, simply because there are things that we don't agree on. When we talk about, you know, the issue of criminal justice issues, body cameras, special prosecutors, those are all things that, as Democrats, we have been pushing, but have, quite frankly, gotten not even a hearing over it. And as I talked about, how do we improve race relations? Those are some of the things that we are going to have to address. We cannot sit back and say that there is not serious racial tensions, not just within our state, but within the entire country. And are we going to be a model for that, or are we going to be at the bottom?
Now, just one more follow-up question, and we're going to get into some specific issues, but I'm curious to know, you know, we've already mentioned now, you know, this rural-urban divide a couple of times. From your perspective, as someone who represents Kansas City, and a lot of your Democratic colleagues, you know, represent Kansas City or St. Louis, what is something that you don't understand about your rural colleagues, and what is something that they have trouble understanding about your constituencies?
Well, I think even when we talk, have conversations about gun issues, and I don't think most Democrats are of a mindset that they want to take anyone's guns away. And in fact, I think you'll find a number of Democrats that actually label themselves as pro-gun. But when you live in a rural area and you are hearing the gunshots every night, your concerns are
very... In an urban area.
Your concerns are a little different than our rural counterparts. In rural areas, my mom is from the country, so I actually grew up with a gun in the house. I grew up knowing how to shoot a gun. I grew up knowing that that was something that you had to respect. But I'm not sure that everyone that lives in a rural area has that same experience, and I think you have to understand that. So that's one of the things, I think, from a rural perspective. We've spent a whole lot of time on abortion issues and whether abortion is right or whether abortion is wrong, and if you consider yourself pro-choice, are you pro-abortion? I do not consider myself pro-abortion. I would not recommend that someone had one unless there was a seriously extenuating circumstances. And I have seen people, call Democrats baby killers, and that's not the case at all. So, I think we have to be open to experience some things. I have been doing a lot of traveling down in the boot heel and really have had the opportunity to experience the whole cotton growing experience and the rice growing experience, something that I had never seen. And I think there is definitely a lesson to be learned to have our urban legislators visit our rural legislators' areas and understand what's the economic engine that drives your area? What are the concerns that you have in your area? And then have the rural folks come to our urban areas and see what we deal with and what our folks' concerns are. And I think when you can put a face to some of these issues as opposed to always standing on the floor and arguing what you think happens, that will make a difference.
In the press release announcing your election as the minority floor leader, you highlighted a couple of issues where you do think Democrats can work with Republicans. One of those was infrastructure, which is interesting because we're also hearing that out of Washington as an area where Democrats and Republicans might be able to work together in the new administration. What would be your priorities there when we say infrastructure? What are you talking about? What do you think it's realistic to expect coming out of this session?
Well, obviously, we're on I-70 every week, so we live it. But we know that we have got to put some money into our highways. We've got highway issues, and we have bridge issues. I don't think there's anyone in Jeff City that will deny that that's something that we need to do. And we have a couple options of doing it. So I think it is incumbent upon us to really look at what those options are. Is the toll road the right option to go with? Is it some kind of public-private partnership? We know that the state dollars are limited. We've cut a lot of taxes, which is eliminating our revenue base. And so finding those dollars is difficult. However, there's an argument that a toll road impacts those that actually use the road. And maybe is that the best option in order to do that? We've seen that done in a number of states surrounding us, and that's something that we have to look at. But I think we've kicked this can down the road for a long time, and we have hit that point where we can't keep doing that and keep our roads safe for people to travel.
I mean, a big part of the issue has been not whether to repair roads, but which roads to repair, right? Where to put that money. And Missouri has this disproportionately large number of miles of state highways, many of which are not I-70, are not right. The heavily traveled urban area roads, but rather out in the countryside.
A lot of our outstate areas as well.
Right. Do you see with the shift, with the lack of shift in power in the General Assembly, any movement toward getting some of that funding back to urban areas like Kansas City and St. Louis for transportation?
Well, quite frankly, I don't know that we've seen money going either place, rather it was urban or rural. We've just kind of avoided that issue. We've had several proposals come up, whether increasing a tax or the toll roads, and then it kind of fizzles out. So I think we have to leave it to our Department of Transportation to tell us what their priorities are, whether they are rural or urban. We've got to stop pitting one against the other. And that's what we've done it with education. We do it with healthcare. We've done it with transportation. It's not a battle between urban and rural. It's a battle of what do we do to make our state better.
Well, and speaking of education, what would you say are your priorities for this session when it comes to education and funding it?
My priority would be early childhood education and how do we fund that. One of the positive things that we saw just in the last month, we've got Kansas City Public Schools, which has been unaccredited for the last 30 years, is finally scored high enough to actually for full accreditation. That's positive. That is not to say that all of their issues have been resolved. We need to keep moving toward that, but it is positive. We saw the two unaccredited districts on the St. Louis side scored high enough to get provisional. So we have seen some improvements in education. But when folks tell me that we build prisons based on third grade education, that tells me we need to make sure that we are giving our children the best opportunity to learn as early as possible. And so I think our focus really needs to be on early childhood education.
Kyle, you're a former teacher, and you've covered education issues for us here at KCUR. What comes to mind for you when you hear about education as a priority?
Certainly, the teachers that I still talk to, the most frustrating thing is the moving benchmark for standards. I mean, they're now, I actually lose track, but I think it's at least their third or fourth year in a row where they've had different tests based on different standards. Of course, they've gone away from the Common Core, so. What is the state legislator's role in that, and what impact do you think Jeff City can have on bringing some consistency to the standards that teachers are teaching to?
As a whole, Common Core has been rejected, but we do need some kind of consistency within a system, because what we have, students do move around, and it's very difficult when each district is doing things differently. And then when a student transfers, either they've missed a class because the district they came from didn't require it. And in order to keep that consistency with our students so that they can move forward no matter what district that they're in, I think we do need to have some consistency. Now, if folks believe that Common Core, which is kind of consistency nationwide, is not a good idea, and that the states need to develop that system, we need to move toward that.
So another big thing in the news this week was the reality of a budget shortfall that Missouri is going to be facing. Revenues lower than expected, maybe $200 million or more. Growth not what was anticipated in the budgeting process. And it's up to the governor to balance that budget, to withhold the spending he needs to stay in the black. You were the ranking Democrat on the budget committee last year. Mm-hmm. How do we get to the place where the budget falls that far short anyway?
Well, part of any budget process is a little bit of a guessing game, in that you have to project what kind of revenues are going to come in. Unfortunately, as a General Assembly, we work on a budget from, say, mid-January to generally the end of March. And then what you find, if you go and look at what we did in April and the beginning of May, you see lots of legislation that comes through that gives all these special tax credits to various folks for various things. And those aren't taken into account when we actually do the budget process. And so,
too many tax credits.
Many tax credits, and then it's a combination of that and revenues not necessarily being what we thought they would be. We have cut a lot of our corporate taxes. We cut the franchise tax, and when you don't adequately estimate what that's going to do to your revenues, you end up with a shortfall, and that's kind of where we are now. Possibility that revenues will pick up, and whether or not it will be enough to cover this shortfall, and we don't know that yet. Mm-hmm. But the budget is a moving target all the time, or even revenues may come in, but at what point in the year do they come in? And so the governor has a responsibility of adjusting that budget to make sure that we stay in balance.
So how would you like to see the governor do that? There's only so many places to cut spending from: education, the transportation and infrastructure things that we've been talking about, healthcare access. Where do you want to see the cuts?
I'd rather see us increase revenues. At the end of the day, having worked on the budget, we have a pretty lean budget. But what we have seen is when we look at our Medicaid program, particularly prescription costs have skyrocketed. And maybe that's something from a federal level that needs to be looked at, is why are these costs skyrocketing at such an enormous rate? So those are kind of things in the budget that are totally out of our control. We have to pay for it. And when you look up and you're at a $100 million shortfall on your prescriptions, that has to be paid for. So when you ask me where would I like to see cuts, I think we're pretty lean at this point. We changed the formula, which I was not necessarily happy with, since we had not actually fully funded, we never fully funded the foundation formula. So the theory,
for schools.
Right.
Yeah.
The theory was, okay, we'll change it so that that mark is lower, but that doesn't resolve our issue. It just gives us a soundbite to say we either do or do not fully fund our foundation formula. But at the end of the day, it hasn't done anything for our education system. As I mentioned, I would like to see us fund early childhood education.
So I'm not hearing any suggested places where there's a cut that can be made.
But I do think we need to look at what do our tax credits look like? And are they providing the greatest benefit to our state? And I'm a proponent for low-income tax credits. I'm a proponent of historic tax credits. But we still have to look and see whether or not we are getting the as they say, best bang for our buck when we look at those. For urban areas, that's typically the only real way we get economic development. But we have given so many tax credits for so many things that it is very difficult to keep a balanced budget as a result of it. And tax cuts, no one likes to pay taxes, but it is a reality of the system that we have, that is what generates the revenue that gives us the services that we want.
You think there's any chance with the Republican supermajorities and the Republican governor that there will be tax increases or that any of these tax credits will go away in the 2017 budget?
Tax increases, because of our Constitution, we will have to be voted on. We have limitations on how much we can increase taxes. So that will be up to the people whether or not, ultimately, whether or not taxes get increased.
But the General Assembly would send that to the people for a vote.
Right.
Do you even see that happening?
I only see it as it relates to, you know, we've seen the cigarette tax issue. But the other thing is the internet sales tax. Missouri's losing out on money because we haven't passed that yet. So there are some things that we can do. And people argue that in order to make our small businesses more equitable with internet sales, that we need to do this. But we have failed to do it since I've been in the General Assembly. We have the lowest cigarette tax in the country. So the question is, should we really truly revisit that and figure out what is a reasonable tax on cigarettes, and making sure that a tax increase is not designed to benefit one group over the other, but where's the best place for those dollars to be spent? So there are some things we can look at to increase revenues that I think will also be beneficial to the state.
Any plans for Thanksgiving?
I have huge plans for Thanksgiving. I have anywhere from 70 to 80 people that are going to descend on my home for dinner.
Are you doing all the cooking?
I do about 90% of the cooking.
Oh, my gosh. Well, are Kyle and I invited? Is the
Absolutely.
Question. All right. Well,
I think after that, then your job as minority leader might be fairly easy.
She's actually cooking for more people on Thanksgiving than there are in the Democratic caucus.
Yeah.
That's very telling.
Yeah, and you take your family down to Jeff City.
Well, I want to thank the guests today, Representative Gail McCann-Beatty of Kansas City and KCUR's Kyle Palmer. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you.
And the last word is going to be yours, Gail, as you... end our show for us with a musical selection of your choice. What should we go out on today?
So my musical choice is going to be Marvin Gaye, What's Going On?
What's Going On? A question a lot of people are asking since the elections. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. Remember, you can find us on iTunes at Statehouse Blend Missouri. You can subscribe there. We're a separate feed now. You can also listen to us online from kcur.org/statehouseblend. If you use Twitter, it's a great way to keep up on the show and all the news from Jeff City and also from Topeka. I'm at PTS Brian. You can follow the host of Statehouse Blend Kansas, that slightly bluer state, Sam Zeff. He's at Sam Zeff. We try to use the hashtag Statehouse Blend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. here on KCUR. Any other thoughts on the program, you can write to me at brian@kcur.org. Look for us online soon. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.